Listen up, all you golfers out there. You need to take a short drive to Acorns Golf Links. The family-owned and operated facility is located just 20 minutes from the JB Bridge. Once you arrive at Acorns, it's obvious it's more than just a top-notch golf experience. It's your chance to get away from the hustle and bustle of your daily routine. You'll notice over 65 identified bird species, rolling countryside, and a beautiful park-like setting. The Acorns experience is unmatched in value in the St. Louis area. Visit acornsgolflinks.com for more details and tee times.
Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on CBS Sports, 105.7 HD2 FM, 920 AM, and InsideSTL.com.
The undercarriage like Doug usually does, so that when Ace Atikin and mounts me on the
okay,
eight,
that's enough.
Who was it, Tim?
Doug, Deke Dotum.
Now, Deke Dotum has already been suspended indefinitely. Deke Dotum has now been suspended indefinitely plus 2 days' time.
An evil cackle right there.
Deke Dotum.
Remix.
Sick cut.
Deke Dotum.
He only wants to love you.
I like this
Deke
beat.
Dotum.
I feel like I'm on E.
I am Dotum.
It's the Ryan Kelly Morning After. This is CBS Sports 105.7 HD2 FM 920 AM and InsideSTL.com live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios. Timothy Michael McKernan, Charlie Marlowe, Doug Vaughn with you on the program. Charlie in at least 3 days this week. Might be Jennings Thursday morning. And then we're broadcasting live to tape in front of a live studio audience on Thursday night at Hot Shots on Manchester. Doug, the listeners will get to take the exit poll. They'll get to participate in Morning After trivia. Questions have already been submitted in by a number of great Americans who listen to this show.
Oh, yeah.
And then we'll also be unveiling those Lemmings T-shirts. It's a sharp, sharp T-shirt that some of the hottest women in the Midwest are sporting.
Well, like who? Such as who?
Jill Cassidy.
Oh, yeah.
Butch Cassidy.
She on the guest list again this morning?
I only see Rick Hummel on the Tease Farms Captain's Log. Tease Farms, the official shrub of the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Sea Monster, Jill Cassidy, her appearance on this show, when? Ladies and gentlemen, the Sea Monster.
I think the strategy should be now, if and when we're doing the show and see her active on Twitter, we pounce.
Well, I like that, Doug. You like that verb there, pounce.
How many times does she have to stiff you before you say, you know what, maybe it's not going to happen?
Yeah, but I think the return's going to be worth it.
3 days in a row, right?
Does she live on the West Coast?
Yes.
So we're talking, that's an early morning for her, Doug, or a late night.
Well, she was at the airport one day, just kind of sitting around waiting on a flight. I mean, I think at some point you just got to say, you know what, it's not going to happen.
And she's an up-and-coming, what, track star that will be
I think so. I think she runs track. I think she runs a half mile.
That's right.
The 800.
Mm-hmm. Rick Hummel will be with us. We know that. That's it. He's presented by Hot Shots. That's at 8:30. So there is a Jill coming on this show, though, this week. Did you know this? How about this sea monster?
Can we guess?
Fire away, Chuckles.
Is it a famous Jill?
Jill Biden.
No, but you're in the right realm.
Man, so it's political?
Huh.
Jill.
Can we have the first letter of the second name, please?
S.
Jill Smith.
Nope.
Jill Stevens.
Samsonite.
Well, that was a good guess. Samsonite.
Jill,
was
Jill Sanders. Jimmy. Bernie Sanders. Have anybody in his family named Jill?
Jill Sanders is Bernie's wife?
Second letter of the last name, please.
T.
T. Stevens. Jill Stevens.
Nope.
Jill St. John.
Stark.
Jill St. John sounds like someone that Iggy would book. Star from the 60s. Okay, could we please have the third letter of the second name?
E.
Stevenson. Jill Stevenson.
Stern?
Nope.
Jill Stearns.
Jill Steam.
Stem.
How about the fourth letter, please, Tim?
Second.
I. S-T-E-I. Stein. Jill Stein. Jill
Stein.
And
see,
and
we
who
got
is
it.
That? That
was easy.
She is the Green Party presidential candidate.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that was easy.
We have a presidential candidate who is polling at around 5%, by the way, joining this radio program on Wednesday.
Yeah.
That's the producer we have. And when I say he is underutilized, I would say he is the Mike Trout of this roster.
He's
on a losing team, and he needs to be somewhere better. But Seamaster, I'm glad I have you under contract for, I think it's 10 years. I think it was a 10-year deal, but you have a 13-week cycle.
rolling deal.
I think at this point, Carrot Top could announce his presidency and he'd get about 7 or 8%.
Did you see the updated CNN poll this morning,
no.
Doug? You got to be thrilled with this.
I didn't see it.
Hesitate to even get into it. I'm kind of in a comfortable spot right now, but I will.
Johnson
because it
up
is newsworthy.
To 15, yeah?
No. Actually, everybody went down outside of Donald Trump. Yeah. Donald Trump comes out of his convention ahead of Hillary Clinton in the race for the White House, topping her 44% to 39% in a four-way matchup, including Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. In that four-way, Johnson is down to 9%. Mm. He had been polling at 13% in the CNN polls. Stein down to 3%, and by 3 points in the two-way head-to-head against Clinton, 48% to 45%. That latter finding represents a six-point convention bounce for Trump, which are traditionally measured in two-way matchups. There hasn't been a significant post-convention bounce in CNN's polling since 2000. That year, Al Gore and George W. Bush both boosted their numbers by an identical 8 points post-convention before ultimately battling all the way to the Supreme Court. The new findings mark Trump's best showing in a CNN poll against Clinton since September 2015. Trump's new edge rests largely on increased support among independents, 43% of whom said that Trump's convention in Cleveland left them more likely to back him, while 41% were dissuaded. Pre-convention independents split 34% Clinton to 31% Trump, with sizable numbers behind Johnson, 22% on independents. And Jill Stein, our guest Wednesday, was at 10%. Now 46% say they back Trump, 28% Clinton, 15% Johnson, 4% Stein. That's independents, to be clear. That's why the numbers differ. Trump's newfound lead is also boosted by a sharp increase in support from whites without college degrees. In the new poll, they break 62% for Trump to 23% for Clinton, while whites who hold at least a bachelor's degree have actually tilted more pro-Clinton since the convention, from a 40% to 40% split pre-convention to 44% Clinton to 39% Trump divide. Now, there is the latest polling from CNN.
I don't like mosquitoes!
And Trump has said,
I'm surprised that a CNN poll would be favorable to Trump.
I love the poorly educated.
Mm-hmm. I would love to see more of Johnson. He just is never out there. I don't see him anywhere. I don't ever see him anywhere.
He was on CNN. He was in Cleveland for the convention. Yeah.
Was he?
And Stein's Philadelphia. Is she in Philadelphia? I know she's in Philadelphia. She's tweeting she's in Philadelphia.
I think you'd have to be watching all the networks
I don't blame people. I mean, it's not Gary Johnson's fault.
No, I don't
they're
know.
They're not
going
to cover it.
Maybe
I understand.
He needs a more
he's not going to win.
Campaign.
And
he doesn't have the money.
Win. Yeah. So, I mean, it's just not going to happen. But it's.
And the other, most of the networks.
And that's a hit. And you know, Clinton's going to get a bounce after this week, which will probably cut into Stein and Johnson even further. And my goal is to see Johnson just have another view up there.
Yeah.
Get in the debates.
I think in another era, he would have been more visible. But now, most of the networks are clearly in line with the Democrats, and you got Fox News clearly in line with the Republicans. It doesn't serve either one of them to give Johnson any FaceTime.
Follow Johnson on Twitter. He's everywhere. I mean, that's on Twitter.
I really, and again, I'm not trying to get into an argument about it. I really don't think, like, I watched CNN for probably 40 hours last week. I honestly don't think CNN is biased. I really don't.
Oh,
I can't
be serious. You cannot be serious.
Doug, I watched the convention coverage wall to wall the entire week. They literally have a 9-person panel. They have one person as the host, and they have 4 people from each side just arguing. I mean, the speech happens, and then they go to the panel. The 4 people that are conservative say it was great, and the 4 people that are Democrats say it was dark and it was bad. I mean, that's every night, and it's going to happen the same way. CNN has half of their panel is always from the other side. I'm telling you.
Well, I can tell you the Republicans think CNN is about as far right as any of the networks out there, with the exception of NBC.
You mean left?
Yeah, far to the left, yeah. And if you're a Democrat and you watch that, you think, yeah, that's fair and balanced. But, you know, if you're a Republican, you say, you've got to be kidding me.
Well, I disagree.
You think it's
you
balanced because that's the political correctness of the moment in this country, and that's what you're used to hearing on most of the networks.
Again, I disagree. I think most people can agree that MSNBC is left, and most people can agree that Fox News is right, and that for the most part, yeah, I'm sure here and there it's not 100% unbiased, but CNN does its best to be pretty close to the middle. I truly believe that.
Chuck Todd of NBC getting emails from the Democratic Convention. I mean, this is network
news.
We're not
talking about NBC.
Okay, but I am for this second. This is network news people being told by a political party what they need to be doing. That's outrageous. It's totally outrageous.
What are you citing right now?
The DNC email to Chuck Todd telling him to get Mika Brzezinski to stop being critical of the Democrats. Stunning.
And this is from the DNC leaks?
Yes.
Here's something. I don't know if you were watching last night, Charlie, since you said you were watching 40 hours of coverage. Were you working last night?
I was not.
Anderson Cooper, and I'm with him on this, he was absolutely blown away as to why the Democrats are allowing Debbie Wasserman Schultz to speak today.
It's unbelievable. It's from a strategy standpoint, it's the dumbest thing they could do.
It'd be one thing if she's going to issue a statement, and by that I'm talking about even a broadcast statement, not a statement that's just, you know, sent emails to outlets, but I'm talking about a statement in front of a camera and there's no audience. There was already a protest in Philadelphia of approximately 1,000 Bernie Sanders supporters yesterday walking.
They got 50 permits for protesters for today. 50,000.
So you can't control what the delegates are going to do in that space in the arena this afternoon when she speaks. And I have not seen it, although I was watching the panel discuss it last night. Paul Begala said, you know, you got to let her do it. She's put a lot of work into it. It's like, I'm truly surprised by that. And it's not, I'm like arguing and want to get my hot take cable news argument right now. I'm curious what the reasoning is. And I haven't heard a reason where I go, okay, I understand. I still wouldn't do it, but I understand. I don't know what the hell they're doing. I really am. And I would say it's the same thing if the Republican has nothing to do with it. I'm just, from a strategic standpoint, that seems like a very limited upside, if any upside, and monster downside to have that be the start to your convention week.
Yeah,
and that's
going to happen.
Serious, serious, serious problem.
Right, and when she goes out there, even if she just bangs the gavel, welcomes everybody in, all the Bernie people are going to boo. It's going to be a very bad look, and it's going to be what is played on loop for the entire day. In the same way, it's a different story, but in the same way, all that people talked about, and I thought it was totally overblown, the Melania deal last week, the whole first day is going to be dominated. It's going to be played on loop of the Bernie people booing for Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Regardless of who else speaks on day one and how great that speech is, that's all anybody's going to talk about. So from a strategic standpoint, it makes zero sense. There's no reward. It's all negative for her to go up there. It makes no sense.
Is this Hillary being in denial again that she could have ever possibly done anything wrong?
I don't know, but it's dumb. It's just from a strategic standpoint, it makes no sense. Mm.
You think this will actually affect many voters? Will say, all right, that's enough. It was rigged. I guess there could be some Sanders voters who will maybe not show up at the polls. Maybe that's how it would affect it. There might be some hardcore Sanders people who won't vote for Hillary or anybody now.
I look at it like this. It's certainly a bad look, 100%. And to be the party that is so open in theory to different religions to potentially attack a guy like Sanders for his religion or lack thereof is awful, especially when that's often your message. I will say this, though, and I'm not trying to create an equivalency on the other side. I think it's fair to say that going into both primaries, the Democrats obviously wanted Hillary, and the Republicans did not want Trump. So I'm sure there were inner workings on the Republican side saying, hey, how can we try to handle Trump and maybe get Cruz to get it or Kasich or something like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, that happened as well?
Probably so, because the establishment Republicans, the Bushes and Romneys, they certainly didn't want Trump. And what measures they took to try to make that happen, I don't know. But if they did something serious, it will probably come out.
Well, their emails weren't leaked, though.
No. That's not to say there was any. I mean, they were pretty open. They gave speeches about it, about not wanting him. I don't know why you got to send an email about not wanting him if you're out there making speeches on network television about it.
Right. My whole point is the religious aspect bothers me, and I think that's a very bad look, again, for a party. One of their major planks is being so open to religious tolerance. But it doesn't surprise me that the DNC
wanted Hillary to be their representative in the same way that I'm sure when it first started, the RNC probably wanted Jeb or whoever it was, and certainly not Trump, but Trump steamrolled everybody.
Yeah, and then as Trump was winning, the RNC embraced him. They said, this is our guy, and they asked the other guys to give pledges to support him and everything.
But they were kind of forced to embrace him. Because if they didn't, if they tried to have an open convention, you know Trump was going to go rogue third party and destroy it.
Well, he did win the voting. So.
No, I agree. But whoever wins, your party basically, as a party, you have to kind of go with that guy. You can't go against them.
Yeah. It'd be interesting to see what Bernie says when he gets his shot. Bernie's
campaign manager was really, really good about it yesterday. Probably better than I thought he should be. I mean, he was saying, let's move on. We're disappointed with it, but let's unify. Like, I thought he would be much more mad and angry about what happened. But when he was doing all the interviews yesterday, he was at least showing a good face.
They would have been madder had this come out 2 months ago when he still had a shot. But now that he doesn't have a shot and they know, I'm sure he'd still rather have Hillary be there instead of Trump. So that's probably what's tempering some of the anger.
But there's going to be a lot of boos if she's allowed out there. And again, I agree with you, Tim, 100%. It makes no sense. There's no upside. It's going to be the story of the day. They're going to play that on loop for 24 hours straight.
51 minutes ago on Good Morning America, Donna Brazile, who is going to serve as the interim DNC chair this week in Philadelphia, said Debbie has spent a lot of time and effort in pulling together this convention. She deserves an opportunity to gavel us in, turn over to the permanent chair, and she deserves an opportunity, I think, to also close us out. So she will open it this afternoon, and per Donna Brazile, who will serve the role of the interim DNC chair this week, she will gavel it out.
I would disagree with that opinion. If you handle this in a crooked fashion, then you don't deserve the opportunity to gavel it in and out. If you orchestrated this against your own party's rules, then you don't deserve that moment.
And also, if you care about your party, really, and you really want your candidate to be elected, you shouldn't want to damage your party by going out there and creating a bad look for your party.
Caller Ellen, who I think would agree with me if I were to say she is historically Republican, she's kind of in the midst. She's kind of like the cat who seems like he's, I wouldn't say he's turning away from the Republicans so much as he's just turning away from Trump.
It's like George Will.
Probably be a good, except Will is obviously very, outspoken about his conservatism. Caller Ellen says, the role of the RNC/DNC is to give their party the best chance to win the election. I can only imagine Reince Priebus's inbox over the last year. That's from caller Ellen. The DNC is going to F this up, and it just makes me so sad and angry. That comes from the Barnhart Brawler.
That make me angry.
I do think from a big picture standpoint, for the November election, it's not a huge deal. Again, it's a very bad look, and I'm very disappointed. But again, in terms of swinging the election, I don't think it's a big deal.
No, because most people on either party, they don't care what their people do. The Democrats clearly don't care what Hillary does. I've still yet to, until this WikiLeaks thing came out, I'd still yet to hear one prominent Democrat step up and say, yeah, I don't care for what Hillary's doing. I don't think she's the right person. Not one. Not one. With a whole list of things she's been involved in that are shady, corrupt. And I haven't heard one of them stand up and say, this is not right.
But they've all come down on her for the email thing. They have.
Who?
Many people have said, hey, she did something wrong. She made mistakes. Whatever the language was, that she was recklessly careless. They accept that. And they say they don't like it.
And then there's usually a but. She's such a great candidate. Her experience is so great. I haven't heard anyone turn against. I've heard many of the Republicans turn against Trump. Not one prominent Democrat has ever said, I can't support Hillary anymore because of all this, because of the corrupt nature of her experience. Not one.
Well, maybe they don't view it in the same fashion.
I'm sure they don't. They think she can do whatever the hell she wants to do. Lie to Congress? Fine. Sure. Make security secrets available to the enemy? Absolutely. That's okay. Yeah, let's make her president.
We certainly have two very polarizing candidates. And that's why, to me, I'll tell you what. Right now, we got no football. The Blues are off. The Cardinals are relatively mediocre. To me, this election is fascinating. I'm much more interested in this election than I am in sports right now.
Oh, yeah, me too.
And again, I'm not saying it should be must-see TV every night. You don't want your political process to be just this entertainment, but that's what it is. It's unbelievable. Like, you're going to watch every night, and something crazy is going to happen this week, just like it did last week.
You suppose it's going to be like this forever now, presidential elections? I'm talking in terms of celebrity candidates who don't really have the experience, or insiders with a history of corruption. These are the kind of candidates we'll always get.
I think Trump has opened the door for people that are not in the political realm to get out there and be taken seriously. And you see, I mean, the guy has a huge following, huge social media following. I mean, he doesn't need the media is biased. He goes out there and tweets, and he gets 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 retweets.
Yeah.
You know, that's his media. That's his marketing.
Yeah, and they even make a big deal of the fact that I'm an outsider, that I don't have any experience, I might not know what I'm doing. Now, I'm an outsider. I'm not one of them. Like, it's a good thing.
Doug, what do you think of the selection of Tim Kaine as the vice presidential running mate of Hillary Clinton?
I guess he's fine. I guess he's okay. I don't know. I haven't followed his career. I don't know a whole lot about him. From what I've read, he seems fine.
He went to Missouri and cheers for Kansas. Your thoughts?
I didn't see that he cheers for Kansas, but no. Why would he do that?
I really don't know. I'm confused by it. But he was quoted when he was in Virginia and Virginia Tech was playing KU in the Orange Bowl that Missouri could have / should have been playing in after the 2007 season. And he was asked if he would be pulling for the Jayhawks since he grew up in Overland Park, Kansas, but went to Missouri. And he says, no, I don't cheer for Kansas football. I cheer for Kansas basketball.
Oh. But he grew up part of his life in Kansas?
Yeah.
I can understand that.
But if you go to the University of Missouri, cheering for Kansas is a rather odd thing.
But you can cheer for both. If they're not playing each other, you can cheer for both. I mean, Kansas basketball is their professional franchise in that whole state. And if you grew up there, that's who you love, just like you love the Cardinals here. And if you went to, if you grew up here rooting for the Cardinals, and then you went to Kansas for college, you might still like a Missouri team or two. I can understand that completely. And if they played against each other, he ought to probably be rooting for Mizzou. But if Kansas played Virginia Tech, I'd root for Kansas too. What do I care about Virginia Tech?
You love Kansas.
I don't hate Kansas. Told you, I don't hate sports teams.
Why do you hate Beamer
ball? There's certain players that I don't like. Certain coaches that I really find annoying. But I don't hate teams.
Michael Vick?
Yeah, he'd be one.
Michael Vick's brother, Marcus Vick?
I don't know much about Marcus Vick.
Some other players that were Hokies?
There's like Bill Belichick. I hate him. I can't stand Bill Belichick. But when he leaves, I don't think I'll still hate the Patriots.
Interesting. Interesting take.
I just don't the players change all the time, so to forever hate one team, I just don't do that.
I'm with you. I love Ohio State football. I actually root for Michigan every game they don't play Ohio State because I want that rivalry to mean something. Mm-hmm. I want both those teams to be undefeated every time they play each other.
Yep. If Missouri's not going to be good in basketball, I would just as soon see Kansas be good, a Midwestern team. I was born in Kansas. I'd just as soon see them win as Villanova or Duke or somebody. What allegiance do I have to those schools?
And you're born in Kansas. Yeah. I think people should understand that.
Right.
Guys, Doug and Kane both cheer for Kansas. Both are very liberal. Think about it. That's from Grandpa Pigeon.
That's not true.
That's a good point.
That's not true.
I watched that Tim Kaine speech. I think it was Saturday.
And again, Saturday morning.
I'm not talking... trying to be biased here, but from a strategic standpoint, I think he's going to be a huge asset because that's the first time I really watched him. He comes across as like Ned Flanders. He's almost hokey in his likability. And the fact that Hillary is so polarizing, this guy next to her, I mean, really, he just seems like a genuinely good guy.
Mm-hmm.
And then from the argument of you got Trump with the build a wall, this guy goes out there, they roll him out in Miami, and he's speaking fluent Spanish during his speech. So we're going to have an interesting dichotomy for the next
four
months.
Do you find it ironic that the DNC put a fence around their convention to keep people out? They built a wall around their convention?
But that's because of terrorism.
Oh, is it? Yeah. I wonder why we want a wall in Mexico.
We can get into this and the numbers behind all that, right. too.
Go ahead.
We had a nice little debate on the fan page last night.
You had a good debate on the fan pin.
I thought, you know, the Cardinals game started and ended then in the second inning. I was done with watching the Cardinals. And I was just reading some information about illegal immigration. And I read several articles. And many of them stated that Barack Obama, and again, there's different numbers you can point to, but that Barack Obama has deported 2.5 million illegal immigrants, and it's more than any previous president. And also the fact that basically since 07, 08-ish, we know Obama took office in early 09, that illegal immigration has been pretty much net zero since about 2007, 2008 at about 11 million.
And I would suspect that's because Border Patrol has been stepped up, and all these people you're saying are deported have been stopped at the border.
But my whole
they're not being picked up in California or some sanctuary city and moved back to Mexico.
I understand.
They're being stopped at the border.
My whole point for saying this is, if you try to point to Democrats as being soft on illegal immigration, at least you can look at Obama, and if you look at the numbers, that proves not to be true. So I understand that Trump is more vocal about it with the build a wall narrative. But again, if you look at Obama's 7.5 years, he has not been soft on illegal immigration. He's deported more people. And if you look at the chart,
stopped at the border.
Well, what does it matter?
Well, there's a big difference. It's a big difference in that. When I think of deporting, I think here's somebody living in the United States now, and you say, sorry, you got to go, and you pick them up and you put them back to Mexico, as opposed to you come to the border and you say, sorry, you can't get in. That's not really a deportation,
but
in my
view. Point is, Doug, it's the same language we're talking about with previous presidents. All I'm saying is I feel like that's a false narrative, because he has deported, which is a term I guess that's not even used anymore. They call it returned or removed, but still, he has deported more than Bush, and it's about 2.5 million people. So I think that narrative is incorrect.
But again, I think the reason is that there's much increased border security now that started, I don't know exactly what year that this all started, but I'm sure it predates Obama's presidency.
Sure, because he gets no credit.
Well, he gets some credit if they keep up the vigilant patrol of the Mexican border. Sure, he'd get some credit for that.
All that I'm
but
saying
again,
is I feel like that's a false narrative.
Being deported and being stopped at the border are two different things.
Okay, but the narrative that Democrats, everybody come on in, come on into our country, I feel like that's false. And to paint it that way is incorrect. That's all I'm saying.
Well, why are they trying to get tens of thousands of more Syrians to come in?
That's a different argument.
Well,
and I don't agree with that.
It's aliens coming in from a country where ISIS is right in the middle of it all. So
I agree
why would
you
do that?
I agree with you. But also, if you let them in, again, if the government lets them in, that would be legally. I'm not saying I agree with that, but that's a different story when you're saying we will accept these people.
And the reason you would want to accept them?
I literally just said
I know,
don't.
But the reason the government would want to accept them is voters. They will be Democratic voters. That's the only reason anyone could think it's a good thing to bring people in from a Middle Eastern country where ISIS has infiltrated.
And you know what? I agree with you. However, when we're talking about illegal immigrants, these people cannot vote. So I don't look at that as a voting strategy, because illegal immigrants coming from Mexico, they will not be able to vote.
Well, you don't know, because the Democrats don't want them to identify themselves at the polls either. They think that's somehow unfair.
What about
unfair.
In the bathroom, though?
In the bathroom?
That was a joke the North Carolina thing.
Right.
All right, let's move on.
What?
Next
I have to have
topic.
An ID to vote? Boy, that's unfair.
Next topic. Doug gets all worked up. I sent him an article the other day.
It just seems so common sense that what's happening.
We
can't be in a hurry to give the country away.
I agree with you.
All right.
We're not arguing.
Okay. All right.
So we settled it.
Well, I
Cardinals bullpen. Who should they get?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just time to bring up Reyes.
I've said that for a month now. Put him in the pen.
I don't
see what happens. Why not?
Yeah, well, they're going to have to do something now, because these guys have thrown so much over the last week or so, between the doubleheader and the 16-inning game, and not getting much of a start last night.
Rick Hummel's going to be with us here in a matter of moments on the Appliances Counter phone lines. Michael's Flooring has four great locations to visit and a huge new showroom at their St. Peter's location. What sets them apart? Their employees. When you come in, they will ask questions that others may not, and will try to find the perfect match instead of selling what they have overstocked. Michael's is great for everyone. They are perfect for the do-it-yourselfers or the contractors. There are so many things that go into a purchase, but go to the others first and then come to Michael's, and I know you'll see the difference. When you think of Michael's, you should think local. Michael's has been local in St. Louis for over 20 years. They're in St. Charles County and West County and North County and Darden Prairie. Michael's Flooring Outlet online at michaelsflooringoutlet.com. It's time for our Cardinal Report brought to you by Hot Shots.
This Cardinal Report is brought to you by Hot Shots Sports Bar and Grill. Bring your Cardinals ticket stub to any of the 12 area Hot Shots locations the day after a home victory and get 25% off any menu item.
The big man will score!
Plus, if you swipe your Hot Shots MVP card, you'll be entered in their first pitch sweepstakes for a chance to throw out the first pitch at an upcoming Cardinals game.
Joining us right now to talk it over, ladies and gentlemen, presented by Hot Shots, Rick Hummel. Commish, good morning.
Hi, boys.
The Cardinals losing 2 of 3 to the Dodgers this weekend. Really fortunate that they weren't swept. Jed Jerko and Matt Adams helped prevent that on Friday night. But unfortunately, the Cardinals weren't able to capitalize on winning the first one, and they lost the next two. And the one that stands out is the most recent. And Michael Myers making his Major League debut, and it just didn't work out. Were the Cardinals considering multiple options, or was it always kind of just, okay, this is an unfortunate circumstance, it's his turn, so we're going to go ahead and call him up?
Well, they took a chance on trying to win Friday's game with Tyler Lyons pitching so long. Tyler Lyons would have had that start last night if he hadn't been used in that 16-inning game on Friday. But not only was he used, he pitched tremendously and was actually the reason why they won that game other than the two home runs you just mentioned. So they took a chance there. And if he hadn't pitched Friday, they could have lost all three of these. So they got one of them anyway, and they had nowhere else to turn. They didn't want to use Martinez and Garcia, either one on 3 days rest. Both have had, you know, arm issues. Martinez a little bit last year, and Garcia historically. And they had to kind of figure out one game. This guy was the hottest pitcher they had, and it didn't work out. It just blew up in everybody's face there.
Seems pretty clear. This is going to be the most important week of the season to date, wouldn't you say? With playing the Mets and Marlins, two teams will be fighting with the wild card spot. With
yeah, Doug, there as. As bad as it seems the last couple of days, they're only one game behind the Marlins and I think a half a game behind the Mets for the second wild card spot. The Dodgers aren't that far ahead either, I think a couple games. So, this is a trip, seven games, not counting the three in Cincinnati at the end. You don't want to go like 1-6 on this, for instance. I think anything in the 3-4, 4-3 area would be fine.
Commish, you know, anytime a guy gets an opportunity in the big leagues, it is an opportunity for that person to make a statement. So Myers had that opportunity last night. It obviously went horribly for him, giving up nine earned runs and an inning in the third. Do you think that was a fair spot to be put in for a guy? And again, he had the opportunity. He could have ran with it, but it's Sunday Night Baseball. It's his first outing. It's on ESPN. Everybody's watching. That is a tough spot for a guy to make his debut.
Well, if you tell yourself, if you factor all those things into it, if you're a pitcher, yeah, it's a tough spot. He kept, as he said after the game, kept trying to sell himself at the same game, 60 feet, 6 inches, but he found out that it wasn't. Now, given his statistics at Springfield and Memphis both this year, to have ERAs under 3 in the minor leagues at two spots like that is really good for a starting pitcher because most of those parks are homer-friendly parks. So I think he was the right guy, but maybe not the right guy last night.
Yeah, that had to be their worst nightmare in terms of trying to work a guy in and what that must have done to his confidence and how much of a setback you think a start like that can be for a young guy.
You don't know. Some guys rally behind this, and some guys you never hear from again. This guy has enough stuff. I think you'll hear from him again, but you won't hear from him until September.
I remember watching this year, I believe it's the pitcher for the Phillies, Eflin, and I watched his first outing. I want to say he gave up like 8 runs in probably the same amount of time as Myers, like 8 runs in an inning or two or something like that. And you just thought, man, you feel for this guy. And since then, he's been one of the best pitchers in baseball.
He threw a 3-hit shutout the other day at Pittsburgh. That's not so bad, huh?
And he was horrible in that first game. I believe it was against, I can't remember who it was, but he got shelled.
Yeah, no, that happens. I mean, he's a guy that went down and and said, okay, I got a couple things to work on here. Let's do it.
Trade deadline coming up here another week. What do you think the Cardinals will do, if anything?
Well, I would think they'd try to get a relief pitcher. I don't know if you're going to get the closer type. I mean, Chapman may be headed elsewhere, and the Yankees say so far they don't want to trade Andrew Miller, and I don't know why they would. He's signed for 2 more years, and they've at $9 million, which isn't that bad, especially for the Yankees. So you might just augment your bullpen. The lineup will be fine here in another week or so when you get Carpenter back. That was the best news of yesterday, that Carpenter's workout was terrific. And then Moss will be behind him, and maybe Peralta second and Moss third, but all three by certainly the first few days in August.
Have you heard any names of relievers who might be out there available?
Oh, shoot, you got you look at the bad teams first. You have Hudson in Arizona. You have Kinfler in Minnesota. You know, you have, they're mostly pitchers from bad ball clubs, and you don't know how they'd perform in a pennant race, as it were, or a wild card race, because they're not in any kind of races right now where they are. So this is something they don't have to do. They don't have to worry about their lineup at all, other than the fact they need to score some more runs sometimes. But and the bullpen is, you need a little foundation there. Some of everybody's just kind of pitching, and some are hot, like the hottest guys in their bullpen now are the three guys that you expected the least from, were Maness, Bowman, and Lyons.
Mm-hmm. Commish, as you said, it seems like every setup man and every closer, especially on the bad teams, are available. Do you think the Cardinals go that route? Do they get a closer to supplant Sungwan Oh, do you think? Do they get an eighth inning guy? And also, any chance that we'll see Reyes in the bullpen, or maybe they wait until the September call-up, if that happens at all?
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if Reyes came up this week, maybe even in, you know, today or the next couple of days, because they got to have some help. And you look at what happened last night. The first go to Lyons, pitching almost 5 innings on Friday. I don't know if he's ready to go back today yet. Maness is certainly out. Rosenthal out, if he's even here. You know, I'm not even sure he's going to be around much longer here until they need some work, and I don't think they can get him the right kind of work here. And then you have Bowman has pitched a couple nights in a row, or two out of three, and he's probably not usable tonight. So they got to have some immediate help. I'm sure Myers will go out today, and I don't know what happens in Memphis. Tuivalu is able to come back. He's been down 10 days, and maybe you can bring up he or Keith Keffer or both.
Rick Hummel, our guest, presented by Hot Shots here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. He joins us on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. Tim McKernan, Charlie Marlowe in for Jimmy the Cat Hayes, and Douglas Sullivan Vaughn with you. Commish, as far as the spectrum goes, so to speak, as far as buyers and sellers go, you know, some people, and I would include myself in there, would really rather the Cardinals be careful with this deadline, just because it just doesn't seem to me, and again, this is my opinion, this isn't some kind of a manifesto, that this is going to be the year for them. And so I would hate to see them risk quality young assets in order to really try and put themselves in position in 2016. Again, that's rooted strictly in my opinion. What do you think the mindset of the organization is regarding the 2016 deadline versus other deadlines in which the Cardinals were in a much better spot leading the National League Central?
Well, that's a good question. And for first touching on what Charlie asked before, I think they would go more for a setup guy than for a closer type. Now, onto this last one, I think they try to win every year, but by the end of this year, you need to know if Grichuk is a regular player,
Yeah. If
Wong is a regular player, if Peralta, do you want him back, is Adams a regular player. All these four things have to be figured out here, and you don't have to decide necessarily by the end of this week. Well, I guess that would help if you wanted to trade for a big fly player. But that, in the big picture, that's the most one of the most important things, is to find out if these young guys you thought were going to be good players are going to be good players.
You think a guy like Jerko might displace somebody like Wong? I mean, you wouldn't have thought that a year ago, but there's no denying his production is far better than Wong's.
I'll be interested to see if he displaces Peralta, you know, because Jerko looks pretty good at third base. Jerko can also play second base. He's one of the few infielders they've had, I think, this year that you could say if he gets his hands on the ball, it's an out. Other fellows haven't done quite as well there with that. So Jerko's on your team, either at third or second. Now Carpenter's coming back, so do you bring him back at second, which you told him he'd play the rest of the year if he made the move, or do you put him back at third where he's been and put Jerko at second? And what happens to Peralta when he's back? And does Wong get to play at all? Wong just, I mean, last night he sneaked in a hit, but he hit like the same ball three times in a row to first base, and he almost beat out two of them and did beat out one. But there's not much pop coming out of his bat there.
Commish, do you think that the Cardinals would try and move Wong? Obviously, his value is at an all-time low. After having two pretty good seasons, though, and he got the contract, so teams would not like the fact that he's making a good amount of money, but do you think he still has value to other teams in the trade market?
That remains to be seen. That's a good question. I think if he was a good player and becomes a good player, that contract is going to look very team-friendly by the end of it. It doesn't look team-friendly now, but by the end of that contract, it's very team-friendly. I'd hate to see them give up on him. I don't think they'll shop him so much as they'll take on queries about him. And if anybody could go on the right deal, I guess. But that's a guy that has speed, if he ever gets on, and power. At least he used to have power. So if he gets his swing straightened out, that's a tough one because you have him and Jerko both signed for 4 more years. So I don't think you can keep both those guys for 4 years.
Talk about power. It seems like almost everybody's got it now. I think the stat is 15 games in a row. The Cardinals have hit a home run. We've talked about a little of this in the past. I don't remember if we asked you this. You think there's something going on with the baseballs or some reason why balls are flying to places in stadiums where they've never been before?
Well, our good friend Whitey Herzog did some testing in his garage a while back, and he thought that the balls were wound tighter. There wasn't so much a rabbit in there, but they were just wound tighter than before. So that... take that for the science, and he's pretty scientific about this, actually. So,
yeah.
I think the pitching isn't as good. I think more players are brought up trying to hit more home runs. That might be as key an item as anything, because early in the season, you know, there weren't that many home runs, and suddenly there were. So I think the pitching is just generally, you know, bad, and home runs are... You know, chicks dig them, and players are trying to hit them again. Little guys hitting home runs out of the ballpark. You know, managers would bench them. They saw those swings taken 25, 30 years ago.
Chicks still dig the long ball. I know they used to, but they still dig them.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, heck yeah.
Come on, Doug.
So, I don't know. And then the commissioner was talking the other day about maybe regulating relief pitching late in the game because he didn't think there was enough action. Well, how much scoring does he want now? He wants to raise the strike zone and do that. The games will never end. That last night was almost a four-hour game for nine innings.
I know. Well, I think some of that was to make the games go faster, too, so the managers didn't make so many pitching changes that delays the game 5 minutes.
I guess so, but, I mean, you want them to try to win, don't you? I mean...
Well, not the other team.
Yeah, well.
I'm certainly for that come September with the call-ups. I think that's ridiculous because the game changes. Like, I'm fine with having an expanded roster. They should do it like hockey, though, and have inactives because to have potentially 15 pitchers to use, it's just so much different than the normal baseball we see in the first 5 months of the year.
You make a good point, and that's one that former Milwaukee general manager Doug Melvin made. He said in September, the teams that can afford to bring up more players are the teams that have an advantage. Since Milwaukee's not going to bring up, you know, kind of a small market, very small market team. If they want to bring up five guys and let's say the team they're competing with, the Cubs want to bring up 10, who's got the advantage in a long game, you know, the Cubs or the Brewers?
Hey, Commish, of course you are a member of the Hall of Fame fraternity in Cooperstown, and I watched all of Mike Piazza and Ken Griffey Jr.'s speeches yesterday, and I thought they were just really brilliant, heartwarming, sincere, humble speeches. And I don't know, you know, you of course get to see those caliber of players, you know, behind the scenes more so than any of us do or have. But I don't think we really saw that side of Ken Griffey Jr. all that often while he was playing, certainly in Cincinnati. He, of course, dealt with an absurd amount of injuries. And I just really found both those speeches to be quite insightful to the kind of guys they were. I was very, very impressed. I don't know if you had a chance to watch that, but if you had any thoughts on Piazza, Griffey, the players, and also the day yesterday in Cooperstown.
I did not get a chance to hear or see those speeches. I wish I had, but Griffey is and was certainly when he played a very private guy. So, as you said, you probably got a lot more insight to him yesterday than you ever had. Piazza is a fine fellow and I think a great hitter. Every time I see a catcher go in the Hall of Fame who's not Ted Simmons, I get mad. So because I know Teddy was as good as Gary Carter or better, and I think he's as good as Mike Piazza or better, and he's got no chance to get in.
How much is Piazza helped by the fact that he played in L.A. and New York versus Simmons playing in St. Louis and Milwaukee?
Oh, a whole bunch. Plus, yeah. Piazza played in postseason play, and Teddy didn't until right at the end of his career when he got in with Milwaukee. So that had a lot to do with it, absolutely. Yeah.
Those signature moments.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have more voters in those places, too, because they've had more papers over the years. You know, that's just the way it is.
Seems like the system needs fixing if that's how they're getting into the Hall of Fame.
Well, I mean, they've weeded out the voting procedure. It's a lot better than it was. The thing that puzzles me and will puzzle me forever is when Teddy's first election came, like in the early 90s, and he only needed 5% of the vote, like 460 votes. He needed 23 votes to stay on the ballot for another year. He had like 17. Now, how can that be? How can 443 people not vote for him out of 10?
I was stunned, and I know, you know, obviously anytime I bring him up, it's like, oh, well, you're friends with him, so that's where it's coming from, but it's just not. I was really surprised that Edmonds didn't at least stay on the ballot.
Agreed.
It has nothing to do with anything off the air. You know, I mean, it's just, I was legitimately surprised by that. But
well, people don't look at defense on those things. They look at how many home runs he hit. Well, he was just shy of 400.
Right, you're exactly right. You know, but then I don't understand if that's the case, and it's not apples to apples. And I loved him. I mean, my God, being a St. Louis kid in the 1980s, it was Ozzie Smith, Willie McGee, and Vince Coleman, really. But, you know, Tommy Herr, Jack Clark, Andy Van Slyke. But Ozzie Smith, I mean, that was defense, and Edmonds' offense was substantially better than
Bill Mazeroski, another one there on defense.
So I was really surprised by that. I don't know if he'll ever get another shot in the Veterans Committee. I don't know if he'll be looked at. Well, he only was on the ballot 1 year, if and when that time comes. But I was really surprised by that.
Well, when you mentioned that only on the ballot 1 year, I'm on the committee that at Cooperstown that puts together the ballot for these veterans elections, and I've always managed to make sure I ramrod Teddy into his era and Kenny Boyer into his era just so they can be on the ballot. But when Teddy's name comes up at the elections, the Hall of Famers are mostly on the electors that vote in December at the winter meetings. One of the first questions these guys ask is, well, how many ballots was he on for your election? And you're forced to say, well, one. And they'll say,
yep.
I don't like him very much.
Yep.
So what are you going to say to that?
Yep, that's exactly what I was thinking with the Edmonds thing. It will be used against him.
And he can't even be considered until the 10 years are up. You know, Jim's got nine more dead years here. You know?
I mean, when Jim and I did that show just for 1 year in 2014, we would have got, I mean, Peter Gammons would come on, and he'd say, I'm with soon-to-be Hall of Famer Jim Edmonds. So we have a number of people who would say that. And again, I don't think it's an airtight lock that he would be a Hall of Famer. I just, for him to not be on more than one ballot is the thing that A, is stunning, but B, because of exactly what you just said, Commission, nobody knows better than you since you're actually on the committee, that the fact that he only was on one ballot will be used against him when the time comes, if the time comes for him to be selected by the Veterans Committee.
Sure. Well, and then look at what happens when Yadier Molina comes up, you know, 5 years after he retires. They got to look at his great defense or the fact he's going to have a .260 career average.
Yeah, what do you think will happen there? What do you think will happen?
I don't know. I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Commish, last year, what I thought was crazy, you know, I grew up near Detroit watching Alan Trammell when I was a kid. And the fact that Alan Trammell last year got 41%, which I'm not disputing, but the fact that he got 41% and Edmonds gets 2.5, I'm just thinking about them as players, and then you look at the statistics, you can make the argument who's better, but I think you can make the argument Edmonds was better, or at least they're equal. So for the disparity to be that great, to me, it does seem kind of insane.
Yeah, I think, wasn't that Trammell's last year on the ballot? Usually the last year they make a little spike there, but it is insane. Going back to Trammell's first year on the ballot was, for him, unfortunately, because it was the first year Ozzie was on the ballot, first and only year.
Right.
So Ozzie got 97%, and Trammell got about 8 or 9 because guys weren't voting for two shortstops. And they thought, well, who's a better shortstop? Well, Ozzie was a better shortstop, but Trammell was a great player. And Trammell never recovered from that. Had he come on the ballot on any other year but that year, he'd be in.
I guess, and then you hear the argument that if we have to argue about these guys, they don't belong in anyway. That it should be guys like the two that went in yesterday, where there's no argument at all. They were among the best.
That's not a bad theory to have. So that brings you to Tim Raines and Jeff Bagwell and people like that that are coming up next year, right? Plus, Chipper Jones will be the year after. Won't be an argument about that, I don't think. But Raines and Bagwell will be. There'll be arguments about them for sure until they get in or their 10 years expire.
Yeah, very true. You ever get back there very often? Just kind of look at your picture in there.
Well, just I always kinda make sure that it's still there. You know?
you take a selfie by it or anything?
I think I've got a couple of those actually. But anyway, next either January or perhaps earlier, we go back for our next committee meeting. So, although it's not quite as pastoral and picturesque in the middle of January as it is in the middle of July, but it's not very crowded.
Yeah, you can probably find a place to stay. I saw they had 50,000.
There's only
there
one
yesterday.
Hotel open then.
Yeah, where do they all go? Where do those 50,000 go? I guess they just make the drive.
Well, in that case, they were able to just
drive. They make the
up.
Drive and they park on people's front yards at about $30 a pop and then they go home.
Yep. That is the truth. Rick Hummel, Post-Dispatch, brought to you by Hot Shots, where we will be broadcasting live for the show that will air on Friday morning. We'll be broadcasting live Thursday night at the Hot Shots on Manchester, starting at 6:30. Come on out for a live broadcast of the morning after specials on drinks and food. Rick Hummel, presented by Hot Shots. Commish, we always appreciate the time. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
There he is.
Thanks. Thanks, Rick.
With us here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Do you think Yadier Molina will be a Hall of Famer? Do you think Yadier Molina should be a Hall of Famer? It's a two-parter.
I think he has a very good shot. I do. I think if he gets up there and you're talking however many 10 gold gloves and if he gets 8 all-stars and if the Cardinals were to win another championship, he's going to have some numbers you can point to. The offense isn't great, but if he's known as the greatest defensive catcher of his era, I think he has a good shot.
I think he's got a shot. I don't know how the rest of the country looks at him. They can't possibly look at him with the fondness that we do here. So I think there's a possibility that people around the rest of the country look at the offensive numbers and they say, I don't think so.
I just think he needs those. He needs the numbers like he needs to have a million gold gloves and a bunch of all-stars, and they need to point to, you know, the two world championships or potentially three to bolster the argument.
Yeah, well, boy, I hope he gets in. I hope he does.
I think the best defensive catcher for a decade-ish, I think that person deserves to get in. That's a premium position.
So do you think Edmonds deserved to get in as the best defensive center fielder for that long?
I think Edmonds is one of those guys. I think if he got in, that's great. But I can see why people think he shouldn't be in, but he surely should not be off the ballot in the first year.
Well, a lot of the timing, you brought up Alan Trammell, and a lot of the timing for Edmonds was a bad beat, similar to Trammell, in that he went on the same year that Ozzie Smith's first year, and he was a first ballot in 2002. And for as little as Jim and I talked about this thing, he goes, oh, it's not happening. You know, it'd be great if it did, but it's not happening. He goes, Griffey goes on the same ballot, and I'll be compared to him, and, you know, it's one of the all-time greats, and could have been a top five all-time player had he not had his health go to crap when he got to Cincinnati. But anyway, regarding the speeches, I don't know if – did you guys watch those as well? You did, Tron?
I did, yeah.
Did you? Yeah, I watched them all. I don't know what the hell I was doing, but I sat there and watched them all. And
I thought it was great.
They were both just really, 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 really good. Great tributes to both those people in Griffey and Griffey and Piazza, but also all the people who helped them get there. I was very, very impressed and glad that I did get a chance to watch him. Doug, I don't know if you know anything about Ryan Kelly. I know he sponsors the show.
He sponsored it for a few years.
I know my sister just bought my condo, actually, and she used Ryan Kelly. We closed right at his world headquarters there in Brentwood is what I would tell you.
Well, what I would tell you is she did the right thing.
Nice.
She probably got the lowest mortgage rate possible, possibly even in the twos.
Tim jacked up the price, though, because it was his sister.
Right. That's how you do business.
You took a commission out of your sister.
Yeah.
Well, that's a separate
issue.
He
said it's appraised for this amount, right. But I think it's worth at least $100,000 more if you really think about it.
Separate issue. Ryan Kelly's going to get you the best mortgage you possibly can. It's a great time to be buying a house. Great time to be refinancing because rates are at historic lows. And when I say that, I'm not fooling around. I just am not. Ryan Kelly was named the number one mortgage lender for most loans closed in the Midwest, number three in the country for FHA volume, number three in the whole nation, number nine in the country for most loans closed last year. And he does that mostly by word of mouth. People go there. That's where I went for my refinance. People go there, and then they tell other people how smoothly it went, how easy it went. It was without a hassle. And you go, well, you know what? It makes a lot of sense for me. It doesn't take that long to get your paperwork together. You just go into Ryan Kelly, and you get your mortgage. Here's your phone number. 314-781-9700. 314-781-9700. And their website is thehomeloanexpert.com, Home Loan Expert LLC.
Ryan Kelly, the title sponsor of this award-winning presentation. Coming up, the Plowhawk and Cucky the Dwarf went on a tour of Soulard. Plowhawk, how would you promote this?
Sorry about that. Should have adjusted the mic and then turned it on. But
happens to the best of them.
It's cool. So we had a plan of going out and shooting video. However, I worked 8 to 5, or I guess I got off at 4, at Billy G's, so already tired. It was 115 degrees, so had Cucky, Buck, and Deke. Deke stopped by for a little bit, just hung out with them. And
That's quite a foursome right there.
It was really
cool. Some of the best in the business.
That's a Mount Rushmore of something.
It was great. Charlie, yes?
Can I just ask, too, does Cucky always wear the half shirt? It looks like he was wearing it out and about.
He was in normal attire, but he always, and I mean always, will carry a midriff, jorts, and thong at all times.
But he put it on, right?
Yeah.
Is that hot to you at all?
He wears a thong?
I'm editing it down now. I have a nice video of him getting ready, getting pumped up, and putting on his jorts and his cutoff, as well as running around town. Just got a couple audio clips of a couple stories.
And he's like a 34-year-old with a kid.
Yeah, so
it's a matter of opinion.
Basically, we were just smoking, hanging out in my crib, and I just set down my phone to record audio. Cucky had some good stories. Buck chimed in, and
What were you smoking?
No, cigarettes.
Cigarillos?
Yeah, see, that told me that you weren't really smoking cigarettes.
Yeah, I would call and go ahead and see the flop.
No, Doug, it really doesn't matter what we were smoking.
Yeah,
Doug. Just the audio content. So it's okay. I just love Cucky, and the stories are fantastic. So
that's coming up at the 9 o'clock hour. Also, your emails the morning after at InsideSTL.com. It is the Ryan Kelly Morning After, CBS Sports 105.7 HD2 FM 920 AM, InsideSTL.com. Live from the Gateway Butte Institute.